As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential Speech Digest in Primus and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
This bill is going to help face our challenges here at home. It sends a clear message to the American people that we're investing in safety, health, and the future of Americans. Let me just mention a couple of highlights, starting with community safety. We know it works to make our communities safer, and that investing in prevention and community police officers so you can walk the streets, know the neighbors, and who can help restore trust and safety to our community. That was President Joe Biden, March 15, 2022. What was he referring to? The funding levels that we had just 4 months ago. That's exactly where we'll be. I don't know where the comments that he's making, but this week we will pass a bill on this floor that will lift the debt ceiling, something the Senate has not done, something the President has not negotiated, and send it over to the Senate. Because we think this is a responsibility.
Well, it is. But Biden has said that he is going to, he said that he's going to veto it. So what's going to happen? That's the big million-dollar question. What's going to happen? We've got to follow this. I have a bunch of stuff to follow today, and we're gonna keep you informed because this is happening. The debt ceiling proposal bill, Biden said he's going to veto it. That could all go down today. There's also some Republicans who are being a little bratty about this too, which we're gonna discuss. Some of these Republicans that are being kind of dumb about this. This debt ceiling vote. So we're going to have that discussion too. And then we're going to get into, I've got wokery, Fauci. We got a whole bunch of stuff to hit. But that, welcome to the show, your lovable curmudgeon, playing for you, the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy there. Of course, you can listen to the radio program coast to coast. You can also stream it, the simulcast of the radio program. You can stream it as well on channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook, all kinds of good stuff. Okay, so I'm going to pull this. This is from The Hill. So The Hill had reported on this, that the House leaders, GOP House leadership, is hitting a snag as people are hardening some of these no votes on this debt limit, right? So the story is that they're trying to sit, obviously they're having a little bit of difficulty. You got Democrats that are going to, they're going to stand in unison against this regardless. It's just how Democrats work. They have a strategy and that's what they're going to do. And there are a tiny number of Republican lawmakers as well that are resisting. You have some people, Tim Burchett from Tennessee, who said that he's a no vote. You have Derek Van Orden out of Wisconsin, Mark Alford out of Missouri. Who are also the whole Iowa delegation of four Republicans. And then the Nancy Mace said some of them are no. And the reason is because ethanol. That's why Iowa is sticking to it, is ethanol, flipping ethanol. I mean, I don't like any of this, but, you know, we also want to make sure that we're going to get something that is not going to be, kind of like a blank check for the administration. The administration's been pushing tax increases, et cetera, et cetera. So the fight has, it's really been over ethanol. And can I just say, I get it that Iowa has this thing with ethanol, but this is so very Atlas Shrugged. It really is. The ethanol issue is the crop from Atlas Shrugged. Let's be real. And it's incredibly frustrating every time I see Because there are certain concessions that people, that's why Iowa's like the big thing. Everybody goes to King Corn, and that's why it's always this big issue. So there were some questions about ethanol subsidy, all kinds of stuff, and that's ultimately what's threatening this. The clean energy fuel drama. And these are ethanol subsidies, by the way. These are all ethanol subsidies. We wanted less government spending, not more. And that's what it is, because it's a 4,100-page bill, and it's looking at boosting federal subsidies for biodiesel and other corn-based fuels, and the entire Iowa delegation doesn't want to give it up. Now, they have offered amendments to remove the repeal of the biodiesel tax credits, and there are some amendments, you know, et cetera, but that's, you know, ultimately, it's the entire Iowa delegation, and there are a few others, including one from Missouri. Now, the debt ceiling could be blocked unless they can get Democrats to support it in place of those Republicans. And these are the Corn Belt Republicans, the 8 Corn Belt Republicans. They don't want cuts to the ethanol, the subsidies. That's what it is. These cost, it's a tiny percentage of the overall federal budget, but these still cost billions of dollars every year. Only in D.C. do we say this is billions of dollars every year. They're trying to cut things that are unnecessary. The whole idea of eating our food is stupid. I think ethanol subsidies are dumb. I have always been against this. It is a progressive FDR socialist maneuver that some Republicans try to excuse by saying that it's Republican to do so, and it's not. It is a big government FDR socialist move. It's not a conservative position. It is not a Republican position. It is literally the crop that's in Atlas Shrugged. Swap it out. It's the exact same thing. And so, even though, because I've seen this argument from some that, oh, well, you know, it's only a tiny fraction of this. It's only a tiny fraction of this, you know, ongoing, but it's still billions of dollars. And we're trying to cut some everywhere we can get it. We're trying to cut something. It's still billions of dollars. So this is the big problem that is threatening ultimately to kind of sideline this. And then, of course, you know, it'll be reflected on McCarthy. Big Corn's going to put that on McCarthy. And so they've said too, you know, when they voted against the Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, there were subsidies for Big Corn in that as well that, you know, these Republicans voted against. But some of these Republicans that are fighting for Big Corn, they like tax subsidies if it's in a Republican bill, because then they feel like that's a shield for them. They dislike dislike subsidies if it's in a Democrat bill, because then they don't want to be on record supporting a Democrat bill. I mean, they're just trying to cover their own backsides. That's what this is. So we're going to talk more about this, because it's infuriating to think that this is, you know, ultimately what's holding everything up. One of it. And I like some of the cuts that have been made here. Do I want the whole thing gutted? Yes, but I'm not going to get my way, because we don't have that kind of control. I mean, ultimately, we don't have that kind of control. All right. So I wanted to play, because we got a couple of other things for you. We got to play this audio soundbite. Audio soundbite. This is on 3. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's still doing interviews, sat down with CNN. And I want you to listen to what he said about the mask mandates.
Facilities, to hear that they only work at the margins, maybe 10%, would make a lot of people ask, okay, then why was I wearing a mask for so many times?
You know, Caitlin, we got to be careful, because if you read very carefully what I said, if you look at the broad public health effect when you have masks that are so-called mandated or supposed to be worn, because so many people don't wear them, even though they're in an arena in which masks are supposed to be worn, or they don't wear them properly from a public health standpoint on the cohort of people, the effect can be only marginal. And as we mentioned, it was 10, 13% or so. But for the individual who religiously wears a properly fitted mask, the effect is much, much, much better than that.
So he admits that it was on the margins. I got to tell you, there were people who were put in jail because they didn't wear a mask. He can sit here and say, oh, well, it's because, you know, this is, I didn't make this. The CDC made this recommendation. Can we just do flashbacks real quick? Can we do hang on. This is, because he also was saying that he didn't shut the country down. Well, we're going to get here. Well, let me get to that in a minute. He also pushed the mask mandates. Now he's trying to say that that was all CDC. Oh, it only worked on the margins. He went out and told everyone to wear a mask. First off, he told everyone not to wear a mask, that they didn't work. Then he came back and told everyone, because we played all this audio. I remember this because we were on air and I was one of the only people, because I have a studio professionally built out of my home where I could still follow everything and not have to do anything, you know, half-assed and remote. We played every single bit of this on air every single day. He went from the whole let's not wear masks to let's wear masks to, oh, you got to wear masks. Now it only worked 10% on the fringe. You rat bastard. People were arrested. They were put into jail. They were fined. They were thrown off airplanes. They developed health issues. Students who had difficulties and had language delays were delayed further. You made us wear these absolute garbage, ineffective, illiberal, unscientific face diapers for 2 years. And he wants to brush this off as, oh, well, you know, it was the CDC. It was the CDC that did it. We knew what the science was on the masks from the get-go. There were numerous studies out. There's a reason why you can't even wear those little things in the ER. You have to wear something that actually does the job. And with this virus, it didn't do the job. We knew all of this early on. And still they push this. I mean, I don't think anyone can be blamed for never again trusting the CDC. I don't know how you can blame anyone for not ever trusting them again. Not at all. We have more on this coming. Now, additionally, I got a couple of other things here. Biden is working to repair Harris's image. That's an actual headline. He's got difficulty with his own image. He has difficulty with his own image. And in wokery, Leah Thomas, the male swimmer who wanted to treat the female team like a rec league, well, he has ended up, he's hitting back against Riley Gaines and saying that, I mean, he's calling her a bigot because she's actually daring to speak out about any of this. He hits back at teammates who, quote, half support him. And he says women who disagree with him, quote, use the guise of feminism to push transphobic beliefs. He said a true feminist would be, yeah, because I'm going to trust someone with a schlong to sit here and to define what is or is not a true feminist. Boy, sit down. He said a true feminist would be working for everyone to come together. The audacity of this entitled man who treats the women's league as the JV team to speak out and try to silence women by using made-up terms for legitimate concerns. That is misogynistic. He is an emotional abuser. Leah Thomas is an emotional abuser. He's abusive of his female teammates. He's abusive towards other women in the sports. And he's trying to mask his misogyny by appropriating the female sex and then playing victimhood. Not going to work. And having the audacity to further criticize the women that you victimize. He is not the victim here. He is the aggressor. We're going to talk about this more. We have a lot to discuss today. Also, just let me give you an idea of some of the other things. Jennifer Granholm wants an all-electric military vehicle, everything by 2030. Oh, yeah. We're going to discuss that. The latest in media as well. So I'm sure that you saw this chick who looked like a Harry Potter character who came out and was saying that Tucker Carlson was so mean to her. I was booked on Tucker's show regularly the entire time that he had it. Never came across this chick. And then she's lying because she's saying that, oh, you know, that she was talking. She was very careful in how she worded everything. But what she fails to tell people is that I don't know how she was around him. He did everything remote. He had a home studio. like I do. So we're going to discuss this. Also, the military weighed in on him. The Pentagon stepped too far.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, so we were talking smack on break. Nebraska is the 27th state to pass permitless carry, constitutional carry into law. That is great news. The governor signed it. It is said and done. Governor Jim Pillen signed it into law. So congratulations. That was yesterday late afternoon. Wonderful news. So this is kind of interesting. This is Associated Press. Taliban reportedly killed the mastermind of the suicide bombing at the Kabul airport. Because I actually saw people like pushing this online. Like, oh, are they, this is a great thing that they, shush up. There's something else here. First off, where's the body? I got to see a dead, burnt, you know, terrorist. That's what I have to see in order to believe it. I have to see dead, burnt terrorists. It's going to make Media Matters very mad. They monitor the show regularly. So it was a ground assault by them. They killed this one militant who apparently spearheaded the August 2021 suicide bombing. So that's what the Pentagon press secretary said. They issued a statement confirming that it had been done. They said the U.S. wasn't involved in the operation. I don't believe you. And then, of course, Mattel introduces a Barbie with Down syndrome, the first ever Barbie with Down syndrome. And the Barbie has amazing hair. Just got to say, stick with us. We got more in store. If you have not changed the way that you buy meat yet, you should make the switch to Good Ranchers today. When you subscribe, Good Ranchers will give you 1.5 pounds of free bacon in every box for a year. That's a $240 value. And this bacon tastes so good because Good Ranchers pigs are never crated and they never use antibiotics or added hormones. And they have heritage breeds that have historically produced the best pork in the world. Subscribe today and get their price lock guarantee. What you pay today will be what you pay a year from now. With Good Ranchers, I consistently get the same quantity and quality of meat every single time. Their all-natural burgers, USDA prime steaks, and better-than-organic chicken have changed my standard for great meat, and it will change yours too. Visit goodranchers.com and use code DANA for $20 off your next box. Get free bacon, great meat, a secure price, and a bonus of $20 off today at goodranchers.com with code DANA when you subscribe. goodranchers.com, code DANA. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Do you support the military adopting that EV fleet by 2030?
I do, and I think we can get there as well. And I do think that reducing our reliance on the volatility of globally traded fossil fuels, where we know that global events such as the war in Ukraine can jack up prices for people back home, It does not contribute to energy security. I think energy security is achieved when we have homegrown clean energy that is abundant, like you see in Iowa. We think that we can be a leader globally in how we have become energy independent.
So that's Jennifer Granholm, the energy secretary. And she was speaking there to the point of the military and energy. And she said that she supported requiring our military to adopt an all-electric vehicle fleet by 2030. Guys, that's not that far away.
Less than 7 years.
Yeah. Welcome back to the program. Your perplexed curmudgeon is here with you today. First off, this is expensive and entirely impractical at the stage that we have, you know, electric vehicles right now. It's entirely impractical. She wants to create unnecessary burdens for a country, our country, during any kind of time of war. If that's what her goal is, this is how you do it. Listening to this woman sit here and talk about energy and military is like listening to me commentate a football game. It's what it is. Can you imagine? I didn't even know the rules. Just imagine how bad that is. It's still almost not as bad as Jennifer Granholm talking about this or Steve Dettelsbach talking about guns with the ATF. If you played video for me of something going on with a football game, I honestly would not be able to tell you what was going on. It would be the most basic of observations. Well, this little fellow here who's in the red shirt, he just dropped this ball. And that's how bad it would be. But it still would make more sense than what she's saying here. Can you just think of this? Can you imagine, guys? We got to go charge up the. Let's go charge up the tank here in the desert. Hey, let's go. Or heaven forbid, what if we have to get into any kind of fight with China? Can you think of the jets for a minute? Jet fuel does not have. There's no green jet fuel. Talk to Alex Epstein about this. Can you imagine? What about the ships? Our big ships, our Navy vessels, our warships. We gotta go solar. We gotta go charge our ships. Guys, we gotta go and charge our military amphibious vehicles before we can sit here and get involved in this fight up here with China. This is like what is going on in her head. You know, this because it's very easy to sit here and just charge up stuff in the middle of battle. Wait, guys, can you just hold off on the conflict for just a second? Times. I mean, that made sense in recess when you're playing tag, right? There were rules, though. You couldn't do a timeout. You couldn't do times if someone was getting ready to come up and freeze tag you. You could not do it. That doesn't apply. I mean, you have to be dying, and it still doesn't apply. You don't get a times against, you know, you don't get that. You don't get a times against charging. I need a moment to charge my vehicles. Oh my gosh, here's a comment. And I'm going to pull this person's endocrine system out through their sinus cavities here in just a moment on social media at commercial break. I'm going to do it now on verbally. They go, why are you betting against America? You think we can't produce batteries for EVs by 2030? Yes, you're absolutely right. That is correct.
Why do they think we can?
Yeah, what? Yeah, exactly. What makes you think that we can? What makes you think we have the resources? What makes you think that it isn't cost prohibitive? What makes you think that we're not going to have to rely on the very geopolitical foes that we would actually be gearing up to battle in order to make this happen? You complete baffling, total, stupendous moron. I'm going to try to be really not as mean today, but I don't feel prevailed upon to be nice. So I will be less mean. Seriously, this is the kind of stuff. Why are you betting? Why you're betting against America? Why are you kneecapping us with our capabilities? Why are you betting against America? By trying to push us towards impractical and proven less reliable tech and fuel. Why are you betting against America? Tell me the green way to run jets. Oh, we're all going to be so interested in hearing that. Go ahead. Tell us. We're all listening. All of us. These people. You know, that's why aliens don't visit us. There's too many of those people out here. Aliens are like, whatever the hell these people are afflicted with, it could be catching this virus of stupidity. So let's not. That's the issue. You know, and further with this too, I mean, when you see actually just the monopoly that China has on this, it's, I mean, there's just no, how are you arguing for this still? We're going to charge up our vehicles, our military vehicles, before we can go fight the bad guys. Guys, give us a second here. Did Xi Jinping write this? Did Xi Jinping tell her to say this? Is this Xi Jinping in the mask? Is this some kind of like crazy Scooby-Doo episode? Ruh-roh, Shaggy. It's Xi Jinping all along. Yeah, we're going to just go ahead and run a however many tons of tank weighs on electric. Oh my gosh. So this is the Department of Defense and the Pentagon are becoming, I mean, they've been turned into social experiments. And I really do think that they hide behind rank and file as a way to deflect blame. Case in point, let me touch on this media thing. I saw this last night and I was livid. Absolutely livid. So someone, now, if everything is true, and I think someone probably was, but I think it was probably a rank and I think it was probably like a pencil pusher. So Politico has this piece. The headline is called Good Riddance. Pentagon officials cheer Tucker Carlson's ouster. The former Fox host ridiculed top DOD leaders over Biden-era policies. From maternity flight suits to diversity policies to Ukraine aid, the military was a favorite punching bag for Tucker Carlson. Now Pentagon officials, they say, are quietly cheering his departure. And they note that they're quietly cheering his departure by running with glee to Politico to talk about it. Yeah, quietly. This is what one official had said. Quote, we're a better country without him bagging on our military every night. First off, I want to call him a derogatory term for a female copulatory organ, the DOD official who said this. Because let's break this down for just a brief moment. He says that we're a better country without him bagging on our military every night in front of hundreds of thousands of people. First off, as I pointed out online, Tucker Carlson never bagged on the military. He was criticizing the weak, pansified leadership that is pushing wokery at the expense of readiness. Senior, cowardly DOD pencil pushers like this senior official who ran gleefully to Politico to flap their gums, they hide behind rank and file and say, oh, well, you can't criticize what we're doing. You're criticizing the military, like all of the military, when in reality, rank and file can't stand you. And it is absolutely wild that anyone at the Pentagon would weigh in on a free press like this. It is wild. Good riddance, said a second DOD official. Hey, how about this? Maybe you win a war and then you talk smack. It's a thought. Maybe you win a war. This is their leadership. The Pentagon took the opportunity to defend itself. Oh, we're only a small percentage of our troops' time is spent on diversity training. Number one, I don't believe you. Number two, that's not what you're paid to do. What are you going to run out to the battlefield and scream, my truth, at Xi Jinping, and that's going to solve it? I mean, the DOD is blaming Tucker Carlson for criticism of the DOD. You have these defense officials, and like I said, I think these are petty pencil pushers, DEI lovers. I mean, the fact that you have defense leaders weighing in like this only proves everything that he said. It proves all of his criticisms. And these people are too stupid to realize that his last troll is getting them to prove everything he said about them. I mean, that's wild. I mean, this is, as I said, he never bagged on rank and file. He always went after the leadership and the military industrial complex. But if you're a senior Pentagon official, yeah, he's dragging you. He was dragging you specifically. And there's a clear distinction there. And the fact that you have these people that are cowardly hiding behind rank and file to cover their own asses is anti-American. It's cowardly, it's anti-American, and it's revolting. And that someone at the Pentagon is weighing in on what's happening with the free press. Thomas Jefferson had a quote for things like tyrants. And I just want them to remember that before they decide to go and glorify themselves by seeking to, you know, try to essentially, I'm just going to use a term that happens all the time in GTA. They're trying to teabag somebody that they basically beat. It's a game term. You know what I mean, Kane? That's what it is. They're trying to, like, you know, celebrate this W by doing this little run. The entire leadership, all defense leadership needs to be rethought. It needs to be cut. We're going to talk more about this here coming up. Now, also, I wanted to bring this up to your attention. Six whistleblowers who claim they work on military UFO programs, retrieving and analyzing crash material. They've all come forward to spill their secrets to senior members of Congress. Now, their attorney said he's in contact with at least six former government officials. And they said that this, because they've been having these hearings on this, talking on this, you know, Roswell-style UFO crash retrieval and all this stuff. Their attorney is a very interesting-looking fellow. I'll give you that. But this has been some very interesting discussion. They haven't had hearings and investigations like this. And I think, this is like the second one in 50 years. Some very interesting things here. Just saying. I'm going to put one of these in your prep email for this evening. A lot of stuff. So coming up, we're going to talk more about this the media and the reactions with Tucker Carlson. He's apparently living his life, living his best life in Florida with his wife. Daily Mail, they sent paparazzi after him. So they had some photos of him. We're also going to talk about Leah Thomas attacking all of the women that he's victimized, calling them bigots. He's name-calling all of them and trying to play woe is me, even though he competed as a man and was no good. And then so he decided to cross over and treat the women's team as the JV league so he could be competitive. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to get into the big corn fight over the debt ceiling. We have a ton of stuff to hit, so you don't want to miss a single bit of it. The KS7 from Kel-Tec might be short and slim on the outside, but it's long under the hood with its 18.5-inch barrel packed into its bullpup design. It's ready for home defense, backcountry hiking, or anywhere you need a compact 12-gauge shotgun. The KS7 is lightweight with a magazine capacity of 6+1 or 7+1, depending on shell size, easy to handle with rear loading and downward ejection, and standard carry handle that doubles as a sighting solution. Every KS7 produced at Kel-Tec is made in the USA by a team who takes pride in their work and believes in respect, family, and the right to bear arms. Every KS7 comes with a lifetime warranty with proof of purchase as original owner. Defend what matters most to you with the KS7 shotgun available through Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. And sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KelTecWeapons.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
I want to ask you about Microvast, which is a lithium battery company that operates primarily out of the People's Republic of China. Your agency granted $200 million worth of a grant to this company. You're aware of this, correct?
There were awards that were, there were selections that were named, and all of those companies are going through vetting process to ensure that there are not, there's no money flowing to countries of concern. And so that those vetting processes are going on. Not a dollar has gone out the door yet.
Okay, and I think you got a letter from a member of the Senate asking what the security protocols are and what the test is. You could see how concerning it would be that Chinese-owned businesses or companies...
We don't want to see the dollars going to any countries of concern. We want them to be coming...
So is it your commitment that no dollars will go to any company, any energy company, taking advantage of either tax credits or grants that are owned by China, by a Chinese company?
No state-owned enterprise will get funding from the bipartisan infrastructure.
What about companies that have material operations in China, which we know, of course, that intellectual property
is full?
That's
why we're using this CFIUS vetting program.
Hmm. That was a very interesting line of questioning there from Senator Eric Schmidt talking to the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. And that's the big question. I mean, how much money is the CCP getting from this? Quite a lot, in fact. There's not really a lot. I mean, there are no safeguards there. And Democrats haven't shown any kind of interest in contributing to the any kind of expansion of safe and expedient extraction as it relates to the elements that are required in order to sustain a grain operation like the one that they're pushing. I mean, this isn't conjecture. This is fact. It's geology. It's science. I mean, we know what the capabilities are of our technology. We know that we're just not able to extract the materials required in order to sustain something like this. And even here in the United States, where you're talking about relying entirely upon a geopolitical foe that would absolutely would just decimate our national security. So this is, I mean, it's a very good, I thought there was a very good line of questioning from Eric Schmidt there on that. I mean, it is, oh boy, it's pretty unbelievable. And also too, you know, going back to her point that she was trying to make of having by 2030, all EV, like a total EV, all the vehicles, the whole fleet. Kane said that's like in 7 years, like 6.5 really. Yeah, not even seven. That's insane.
Remember that?
That is just, what in the world? That's not even possible. Yeah, and the United States Postal Service. By the way, have you seen one of those new vehicles driving around that they had, the one that looks like a child's drawing? Uh-huh. I saw one in a commercial. I haven't seen one out in the real life, but yeah, they had 66,000 electric vehicles. That's what the United States Postal Service wanted. They wanted to have the largest electric vehicle fleet in the nation. Now, notice it's government doing this. You don't see private entities doing this because it's not, A, it's not sustainable, B, it's expensive, and C, it doesn't make any financial sense. But the government doesn't have any such requirements. They don't have any such considerations because you are their endless stream of cash and votes. That's all you are when they see you. Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, that was, what, about $10 billion. $10 billion they're spending for that. They don't need to. They don't need to. It's a completely unnecessary cost at a time when they were complaining about not having enough money. Remember that?
Yeah.
We got a lot more to hit on, folks. We have a second hour coming up. You don't want to miss. Stick with us. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Well, that's true, Caitlin, but the point that I made in my response to the reporter in the New York Times article was that what it is that there was a personification of me as a person who essentially closed everything down. Those were public health recommendations that came from the CDC, and I have always been very supportive of the CDC because they base their recommendations purely on public health issues. And the point that I made, that as public health officials, it's our responsibility to give the public health perspective to it. The decision of how that balances with other considerations really comes from other authorities, from authorities who have things other than just the public health to be concerned about, economic and other considerations. So that's the point I was making. I was not trying to shun away from responsibility. We made a public health recommendation.
Gosh, finish your sentence. It's killing my soul. Welcome back to this 2 minute Christmas. I mean, it's like, okay, we got the point. Shut your mouth up. Shut it up. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. You're unnerved curmudgeon. You can listen coast to coast across the country. You can also watch the simulcast of the nationally syndicated radio show on YouTube, where there's always fun discussion. Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. That was Hoggle from one of my favorite movies, mind typo. Kind of want to leave it, but that was Anthony Fauci, former head of NIAID.
Does anybody else get frustrated when they hear him say what he said? Because our elected officials go to him for those directions.
There's a reason why he was on the stage during that whole thing.
He's acting like his hands are all clean of this stuff, like he had nothing to do with it.
So this, speaking of which, can we please prepare thy ears for audio soundbite four, because here was, now, sidebar, we did not put this goofy music underneath it.
No.
I hate it. Listen, just quick sidebar. If you're a person putting together a video montage, please spare us all the injustice of having to suffer under your poor musical taste. And do not add stupid music that you think is funny or adds to some sort of characterization of the montage. Just let the video montage do its thing. For the love of all things holy, thank you, signed America. Go ahead.
Do you regret particularly the last one, the shutdown, the sweeping shutdown that some said made things worse?
No, I don't, Neil. And in fact, I think we need to make sure that your listeners understand I didn't shut down anything.
I recommended to the president that we shut the country down. And the only way to do that is by draconian means of essentially shutting down a country. We know that we can do that. if we shut down?
Well, I think one of the things you really need to do, to the extent that you can shut down temporarily the country, I think is important.
Well, if I knew at the time that shutting down would have such a dramatic effect on controlling the spread, obviously we would have shut down earlier.
And once again, stop putting your dumb music in the beds of video montages. That was Anthony Fauci saying, he was saying, shutting the country down, but I didn't say shut the country down, but I did say shut the country down. Repeatedly I said it. See, I mean, that's why we don't believe these people. You can't. So this is the latest that comes out. I mean, the truth is out. He had to admit that the masks didn't work. We knew it didn't. He first came out and said they didn't work. Then he said they worked. Then he said that they really worked and you better be wearing them or you hate everybody. I mean, not to that extent, but. He said, quote, from a broad public health standpoint, at the population levels, masks work at the margins, maybe 10%. So he finally admits what he said in the beginning, because that's pretty much what he said at the start of this. And then everyone's like, no, you must wear the face panties. And then he changed because he wanted public adoration. He wanted popularity more than he wanted principle. He wanted adoration more than he wanted science. That's true. Go back and look in the very beginning. In the very beginning, he said no masks. He said they don't work. He said they don't work. And then they try to be like, well, you know. He said in February 2020, and he said this in interviews and in an email. Remember the email that came out? All these emails through a FOIA request. He said, well, you know, if someone coughs or sneezes, he said, quote, in an email, I do not recommend that you wear a mask. He said on March 8th, 2020 to Reuters, quote, there's no reason to be walking around with a mask. He said all of this. He was up there because he, in his position as the director of NIAID, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, that was his department. And they worked with the CDC. He had every right to say that they didn't work. And he said that in the beginning. That's when I was like, well, maybe he's not, you know. As soon as Trump started like ceding the press conferences over to these people, I was like, oh, I'm a little nervous. I mean, I like the fact that we're being informed, but I want Trump to be more involved in the discussion and not just standing there. And at first I didn't like Fauci because he sounded like he was going to be kind of condescending. And then he came out and was like, oh, well, you don't need to wear the masks. And then I thought, oh, well, maybe he's not that bad, because we all knew one of the first things that happened, it was over at Real Clear Politics. It was like on day one, they came out with a list of all the studies that have ever been done. It was so comprehensive. You'll have to spend a couple of days reading them. That's how many there were. All of the different types of masks, all of the different studies, because everyone was anticipating this mandate. And then it wasn't until the left started going crazy over forcing everyone to wear masks that he went on with it. And being that he was the most visible person on the stage as a part of the coronavirus task force, he became the avatar for medical recommendation for everything that, you know, people had to do. And he sought that out. He tries to downplay his role in it after the fact by saying, well, it was the CDC's recommendation. We remember him seeking this out. They didn't have the CDC and Deborah Birx doing photo shoots with Vanity Fair. That was Anthony Fauci. She didn't get a bobblehead that was sold. That was Anthony Fauci. People weren't wearing Deborah Birx shirts. They were wearing Anthony Fauci shirts. He sought the limelight. He sought the press. He entertained it. He loved the adoration, and he actually modified what he thought about the science to fit public perception because he wanted their praise. And now he's trying to walk away from it. We had our kids in masks for 2 years. There was a woman, you remember this? In a Minnesota hospital, let me share this story with you. This was back during the lockdown and the masks and all at the height of everything. There was this woman who ended up, she worked at a Minnesota hospital, and she was fired because she wouldn't wear a mask. She won a, what is it, the payout that she got, $180,000 payout that she ended up getting. And this was, she was fired, she was deaf, so she didn't want to wear the mask because she lip reads, right? And she wanted other people, she needed to be able to do her job, and, you know, she's a medical professional. And so the hospital made nothing, they didn't say that they did anything wrong. She had a $180,000 payout from North Memorial Health Minnesota. She was fired, Kayla Voigt was fired because she didn't want to wear the masks and she was struggling to lip read. And she worked with mental health services for the deaf and hard of hearing. And they fired her over masks. They fired her for that. You had people who were jailed for not wearing masks. There was a man, and this was in Harnett County, which it spent 24 hours in jail. He didn't want to wear a mask. There was another woman. I mean, I've got all kinds of stuff. There was a man in North Carolina. He didn't wear a mask. North Carolina judge threw him in jail for 24 hours via Washington Examiner. A lot of cities imposed a criminal charge for not wearing a mask. If you didn't wear a mask in Texas businesses, even though the governor rescinded a state, he had rescinded any kind of statewide order. In a lot of the towns and counties, they still required it. Clay Jenkins in downtown Dallas demanded that everyone wear a mask. You could face a criminal fine if you didn't wear a mask. Art Acevedo, a bad cop who once threatened to use the powers of his police department to spy on me on Twitter because I disagreed with his stance on the Second Amendment. Oh, he did. There's receipts. He said that people can be cited and charged with criminal trespass if they don't wear a mask in a business. All of this stuff happened because this guy was the face of it and went along with it and pushed it. And now he's, now we realize that we knew that from the beginning, but the people who were paying attention to science and truth were called conspiracy theorists and murderers. People were called murderers if they didn't wear a face covering, an ineffective face covering. It is one of the biggest psyops that's ever happened to the United States. And it really tested the mettle of just how far we've fallen. You know, we went from a people who threw tea in the harbor over a damn Stamp Act and some other things that were seemed way less worse in comparison to some of the issues that we deal with now. We went from that to, yes, we're going to stay in our homes for 2 years and we'll cover our faces and have our children go through hell just to satiate the completely unscientific demands of the, you know, the elite government self-appointed aristocracy. So what we did, people did that. And if you at all protested against it, you and your family were demonized. So screw you, you rat bastard. Screw you. You put families through hell. You and your medical dictates, you and your medical tyrants, you put a country through hell. And you don't even have the courage to own what you said privately. To own what you said in the beginning. No, you don't need to wear a mask. It's going to be ineffective. No, you don't need to do that. You went from that to now you're deferring to the CDC to dodge blame. And then you have the audacity to pretend that you're a victim after people were thrown in jail for what you and your other medical tyrants demanded. We had the entire the administration of the United States handed over to medical tyrants for a significant period. And it happened on a Republican administration, continued on a Democrat one. We have more on the way. Got some headlines coming up, too. And wokery. And how the Sudan war is really another proxy conflict with Ukraine. We're going to, or with Russia. We're going to talk about all of that. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes. And, you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Well, in case there was any confusion, Bernie Sanders did endorse Joe Biden. One old man endorsed the other old man, ruling out his old man 2024. Candidacy. So I know you guys were just waiting with hot anticipation on that. I know you guys were so excited. You were waiting. Oh, now also, let's see. The CBS News poll found that Democrats are there's just sort of reluctant about having Biden. That's the best way I can put it. They said that Democrats are meeting it with acceptance more than excitement. No, that's what a way to dress up. They don't like him. What a way to dress it up. Well, they're meeting it with acceptance. What?
Not excitement.
Yeah, not excitement. They're not excited. They're accepting it. What a headline.
Good Democrat.
Yeah, there you go. So Donald Trump is suggesting that he's not going to participate in the primary debates. Okay. I don't know why. Yeah, he was saying that it's held at the Reagan Library, where his son, by the way, had a book signing. Donald Trump Jr. had a big old book signing at the Reagan Library. So he's saying that the guy who publishes the Washington Post is on the chair. There are a lot of actual Republicans on the chair, too, or on the board of the Reagan Library as well. And Don Jr. had a book signing there, so I don't get, like, I mean, they're, what? That doesn't make, I don't know. I think you should have more, as many debates as possible. This is not the time when Republicans should be running from anything right now. Not at all. This one headline, Vanity Fair said Tucker Carlson's prayer talk may have led to Fox ouster. This stuff freaks Rupert out. I think this is a stupid headline and a dumb story. If you see it from Vanity Fair, you see this headline, just ignore it because it's so stupid. I don't, no, nobody believes this. Let's see here. The, oh man, Soylent Green, it's back. Like an actual issue. It's being raised in a legislative debate over human composting, which is, oh my gosh, I'm going to throw up not just a little bit in my mouth, but a lot in everyone's. Proponents say it's an eco-friendly way to deal with remains. You're going to compost people. But, you know, speaking of which, we just had Earth Day last weekend, and I forgot to remind you because it was on a Sunday that that's Earth Day start was created by a murderer who killed and then butchered, cut up and composted his girlfriend. Yeah, that's how Earth Day started. So he was the original human composter. Who knew that? Google ad revenue dropped for a second straight quarter. Aw, imagine that. Yeah, who knew? All right, so coming up, Thomas Massey, this just happened, dragged the ATF director. It is brilliant, and you've got to hear it. Stay with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
The market. Right, let me challenge that assertion. So you say that the brace changed, and so you had to implement this rule. Well, I've got here the actual original brace that this letter was responsive to. Are you telling me that this brace is exempt from your rule?
What I'm saying is that if people have products that are not designed...
Is this brace exempt from your rule?
I can't sit here and classify...
This is the brace you wrote the letter to.
We will give it a classification, and if it's not ruled to be attached as a short-barreled rifle, it will not be subject to the rule.
Would you please quit telling this committee that the brace has changed and that's why you did the rule, when in fact you're not exempting the same brace that you gave this letter to?
If the brace is submitted, we'll classify it.
Do you still have the same agreement that this brace that the ATF agreed to in 2012 should not be under the jurisdiction of your rule?
If that brace is submitted with a firearm, we will examine and classify it. If it doesn't qualify...
Okay, reclaiming my time, because it's pretty obvious you're misleading people here when you say that the brace has changed, because your rule affects the braces that didn't change. How many days have passed? How many days do people have to comply with this rule?
They can always comply, but the initial period...
Before they're felons?
But the initial period, I believe... ends at the end of May.
Okay.
But people
end of
are...
May, so we're, and it was 120 days, is that correct?
People are only felons if they intentionally
violate... Is it 120 days?
...the law. I believe it's 120 days from
the... So we've got 36 days left of the 120-day grace period. Can you tell us here today how many people have complied by registering this product?
I am not sure of the exact number. I can check, though, and get back to you. There are people who are making applications. There also can be detachment. So in other words, we don't count. That's not for us to regulate. If somebody simply, we wrote the rule to make it easy to comply with. If somebody just at their home detaches the weapon from the brace and keeps them apart, they do not have to register anything. They can keep the brace. They can keep the business end of the gun.
Okay, that's great clarification. So you're not going to do some kind of constructive prosecution where you say, oh, well, you had this and you had that and you intended to connect
they're keeping
them.
The, I mean,
they can just keep them separately.
Them as we as
keep
we
them separately.
Them, but
okay, because that's not clear in your rules. What is the punishment if somebody is convicted as a felon under having this piece of plastic?
If people are convicted of not following the Gun Control Act, it's a serious felony conviction.
But that requires intent. Can you just give me the number? Is it 10 years?
I believe it's a statutory maximum of 10 years.
10 years for owning a piece of plastic that you were told was legal and that you owned for a decade and that millions of people did? This is what offends the sensibilities of Americans, whether they own these or not. Do these make the gun fire more rapidly?
The stabilizing.
Do these braces, increase the muzzle velocity?
The stabilizing.
Do these allow the? You're not answering any of the questions. Do these allow the firearm to carry more bullets?
The stabilizing rounds? Braces allow, if they're the kind that count, allow the firearm to be shouldered.
Let me ask
in
you
way
this.
That Congress
I'm glad you brought that up. So this is a stabilizing brace here. Here's a pistol without a stabilizing brace. Does the buffer tube, could that be shouldered?
That would have to be submitted to the firearms experts at ATF, and we could classify it.
Do you think you have the authority to reclassify this pistol as a short-barreled rifle simply because it has a buffer tube?
The rule is aimed at clarifying, and there are specific factors that are set forth in the rule.
Do you think you have the authority to reclassify the firearm above because it can be shouldered?
For me to sit here and try to do a classification that firearms experts who've worked for decades do would not be appropriate. But we will give classifications, and if things don't qualify under the rule, then they don't qualify. And nobody, the piece of plastic in and of itself is absolutely not.
I submit you don't have that authority, and you don't have the authority to do what you did. I reel back.
Oh! Oh! Oh my gosh, that was wonderful.
So good.
That was so satisfying. That was amazing. That was Congressman Thomas Massie. Oh my gosh, he beat him. He beat that man on C-SPAN. Do you see that? My gosh. Look, first off, welcome back to the program. Your very satisfied curmudgeon here with you. Congressman Thomas Massie, whenever he asks you a question, don't assume that he doesn't already know it better than you do. Because he's Thomas Massie, he's MIT Thomas Massie. The man literally made a self-powering debt clock that he wears as a pin from scratch. He is literally a living MacGyver. He knows all about this. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't build the two rifles that he showed, or the two pistols that he showed in his little slideshow there. He was talking to ATF Director Steve Dettelbach, right? And so this is all over this bump stock rule. Yeah. There was a Sixth Circuit court that was like, wait a second. So this is still... The pistol brace rule and the bump stock rule. Sixth Circuit did something with... They just did something with the pistol brace rule using the exact same reasoning is what I meant to put in there. That we've been talking about with the bump stock. This was the bump stock thing. And the reason that they're very similar is that you have the ATF that is trying to classify an accessory of a firearm and use that to redefine what a firearm is for inclusion in the NFA, which is the National Firearms Act. And so that, I mean, the one of the other takeaways in here, so this is why we had on Stephen Holbrook a couple of weeks ago, because I wanted him to talk about the Supreme Court case that gave that workaround that Dettelbach is actually talking about. And I'm going to pull this up here. Forgive me. I'm going back on my notes because this is, we had him on, we were talking about this, and it had to do with the pistol brace and how one of the points in that line of questioning Dettelbach was that made him sound even more ridiculous. He was like, yeah, his actual quote was, if someone just detaches it and keeps it apart. Who's going to come in and figure that out? That was actually, and I'm pulling this up, that was actually the Supreme Court case, which was saying that if you have a pistol and you have a brace, so long as you have, you know, you have like a long barrel attachment or something like that, and you could take it apart, etc., then it's not a big deal. But yeah, who's going to be coming in and check? This is so stupid. The pistol brace was actually invented by a guy to help his friend who was a disabled veteran. And I reject the arguments where people were like, well, actually, I love those people. A-C-K-S-H-U-A-L-L-Y, the actually people. So you have the actually brigade who gets up there and they're saying that, well, you know, this was just honestly a way somebody invented this just to get around the NFA's SBR rules. Now you're like, what are all those letters mean? NFA is the National Firearms Act. It's stupid and unconstitutional. The SBR stands for short-barreled rifle. So there's requirements on, you know, you can't treat a pistol like a rifle. You have to have, you know, for a pistol. I mean, there's all kinds of requirements for barrel length, etc. It's also arbitrary. I dislike all of it. But they have different measurements that mean that something is either regulated by NFA or not. And so they're trying to say that a pistol brace technically means that you can shoulder this pistol, and that makes it a short barreled rifle. So the barrel's not as long as other rifles. So that should actually be an NFA item, meaning National Firearms Act, you have to go and pay the government hundreds of dollars and beg for permission to own something that has been legal for you to own for so long. It would be like the colonists going and asking the British if it was okay if they owned the same types of guns that the British owned. I mean, it's so stupid. So going back to this, he's saying that, well, if you just detach it, do you see how completely ridiculous this is? Furthermore, I could listen to Thomas Massie drag this dude forever. Furthermore, here's where the big rub comes in. And regardless of whether or not you have or even care about, you know, pistol braces, this is why you need to know this, because you can substitute any other of these agencies for the ATF, and any of these agencies can create, they all have the ability, and they've all been doing it as we've seen, they will create rules that have to be treated as law. Otherwise, you are considered a lawbreaker if you don't follow them as law too. And like, for instance, the CDC with the rent moratorium and lease moratorium, there are tons of examples of this. And the ATF, this is supposed to be congressional action, and they're circumventing congressional action. And so the situation with this is that when the guy who invented the pistol brace, he went actually shooting. He was at the range with a disabled veteran friend of his who just came back from Afghanistan, and his friend wanted to still be able to shoot and wanted to hunt and wanted to be able to do these things. But he had a lot of problems just holding and shooting a pistol. And so he created, you know, who were engineer, he created this thing for him to his friend to be able to hold it and use his pistol. I mean, pistol braces, I've shot with them before. I mean, I don't really need them. I can see how it helps someone who's a disabled veteran. That's who it was created for. I mean, these are just not things that I, you know, like that or bump stocks or anything. I've shot with bump stocks. I think they're dumb, but that's not the point. So the situation with the pistol brace, he went and he sent the design to ATF. He did everything by the book. This guy did everything by the book. He sent it to ATF. He did all this stuff. ATF was like, yeah, this is totally fine. They told him it was totally fine, not just once, but twice. Totally fine, right? And then someone several years later tried to raise the issue at the ATF because they were morons and they tried to argue, well, couldn't this just be used as an SBR, short barrel rifle? And the ATF at the time said, no, it's a completely fine and legal object. This is like 2015. Then they turned around, you know, not long after and said, oh, wait a minute, we changed our minds. After everyone waited and in good faith purchased these items legally, after companies created these items legally, then the ATF comes around and says, oh, no, they're actually illegal and you have X amount of days to turn them in or you're felons. A piece of plastic that changes not at all the functionality of the gun. It does nothing. Unless you're a disabled veteran or disabled, period, and you want to be able to, you know, use your pistol. You know, I know this is shocking to gun grabbers, but disabled people can also be targets of crime. And maybe they kind of want to defend themselves. It's a crazy thing to think, I know. You know, we like to assume the best of our criminals, that they're not going to attack someone who might be dealing with a disability. I know that that's how gun grabbers think. Yeah. But this issue, he did everything by the book, and then the ATF turns around and says no. And then they give everyone, you know, the hourglass. You have this amount of time, otherwise XYZ. You know, you're a felon. You're actually a felon. Hunter Biden can lie on a 4473 and it's provable. But you can do, and he's fine. Nothing. You buy a piece of plastic in good faith when everyone said it was legal twice. And then the ATF, because they decided to get it's a politicized from the get-go. They decided to get even more politicized, and they want to say that it's illegal to have. And then now what, you're a felon. So that's the big rub here. It's a really big rub. And that's one of the things that has really, I've written a lot about this, and that's one of the things that's been hit on before. See, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you don't even barely know what a bump stock is or a pistol brace is now after me telling you this. I don't even care if you, it doesn't matter if you know what the NFA is or that SBR stands for short-barreled rifle. It doesn't matter if you know the history of the pistol brace. It doesn't matter what because all of that those are all variables in the same formula that is used repeatedly to curtail your rights. Government bureaucratic agency of unelected officials create a rule that you have to treat as a law, circumvent Congress, and then turn you into criminals if you don't follow this law that was created by a bureaucratic agency as a rule and never actually went through the legislative process of becoming law. That is the formula. All these other things are variables. That's why you need to pay attention to it, even if you think it doesn't affect you or isn't of your interest. We have a lot more as well coming up because, oh man, that was just brilliant. I'm actually going to message him. I've never done this and compliment him. Yep. This is maybe the second time I've ever complimented on a lawmaker for their line of questioning publicly. It was that good. That's what happens when you have a lawmaker who knows what they're talking about. That's what you should expect of your elected officials. Thomas Massey is gold standard. Gold standard.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so I got to tell you about killer clowns. I don't really have a problem with clowns. I'm not really scared of them. Like Killer Clowns from Outer Space was one of my favorites. I had the Dickies that did the music for that. That was really cool. Anyway, so here's Clowns plus Florida. Never thought I'd ever have this kind of story. Florida killer clown Sheila Keen Warren pled guilty to a 1990 shooting, but she could actually go free next year. Now, this case goes back all the way to May 26, 1990. Someone dressed as a clown handed Marlene Warren carnations and balloons, including one that stated, "You're the greatest," before shooting her in the face in front of her 21-year-old son. Marlene Warren passed. She passed 2 days after. The killer clown, Sheila Keen Warren, 59, pled guilty to second-degree murder. She married Warren's widowed husband. They said there was something like an affair that was involved, et cetera, et cetera. So now it looks like she could actually go, like, she could be free here soon. That's kind of wild. I mean, that's like methodical and thought out and intentional. And I don't know. I just don't think that, I don't know. I just don't think, I don't mean to sound like Charlie Day, but I just don't think that she should be going free. You know, I don't, I'm just saying. A suspect was caught with a bag of heroin, and he said it was actually chili powder from Guatemala.
Oh,
Daniel Asensio Barrera. He was pulled over, Clearwater, Florida, and they had a revoked license. And they did not buy the police that it was chili powder. That did not work, and he's now in jail. Stay with us. Third hour on the way.
Tucker, it was different. And as a text that came out revealed my suspicions, he was looking for ratings bait. Purely, and was also looking for power. It was a combination of ratings and power and manipulating the audience, and manipulating also the political system. There was an aspect of, I can pick who the House Speaker is. I can pick who the President of the United States is, or who the Republican candidate's going to be. And I thought that was really dangerous and didn't want that kind of power. I didn't want to have Senate candidates calling me and being very upset, are you going to destroy our whole campaign tonight? Because he could do that, and he would call and tell them that if you don't participate or you don't come on the show, we will destroy you. And I was told to tell that to congressmen sometimes, and I didn't. How can I? That was disrespectful. So in addition to the misogyny and the sexism and the anti-Semitism, there was also just this sort of moral growth with me where I reached a breaking point because of all of those things, and I literally did not want to do it anymore. It felt disgusting. I stopped watching news when I came home. I didn't watch anything. I just didn't want to because I was so depressed and disillusioned by the entire media system because of Tucker Carlson.
And she apparently forgot what decade it's in, what decade she's in. Going by the hairstyle. I can say that because no one else will. You all know that you thought it. I'm just being honest. Welcome back to the program. Top of our third hour. Dana Lash here with you. This woman who is a liar, she's a liar. Her name's Abby Grossberg. She had worked apparently briefly, very briefly, for Tucker Carlson. And she apparently, according to other employees, as it was reported, and I think who was this? This was over, yeah, there were a couple of people who were talking about this. People were saying that she never actually met him. She worked very briefly out of the New York City office. Anyone who knows Tucker knows that he was remote. He has a place near, you know, way up north, and he's got a place in Florida. He was rarely, if ever, in studio. That's a fact. I was booked on his program regularly since it launched, and I never had dealings with this woman. Ever. She was there very briefly. And it's a wonder why she didn't leave at the time if she was just so. And also, you know, the other thing too is that none of this comports with any of the experiences of people who actually knew him. None of this actually comports with that. This is character assassination. And this woman immediately runs to MSNBC to make these smears, which makes me believe her even less. I mean, she went on MSNBC to make accusations that are totally out of character, you know, for him. I mean, I've talked to him a million times. I've known him for over a decade. I was on his show regularly. That is completely contrary to everything that I know about him. I've never, ever once heard of him acting like that. I never, ever saw him acting like that. And I have friends that work with the show that never saw him act like that. This woman is just engaging in character assassination. And I do think it's interesting that she does this the same day that, you know, sources from the Pentagon decide to get involved and remark on a story involving the member of the press. That to me is incredibly troubling. And I think it proves everything that he's said about these people. I've never heard one thing that was either anti-Semitic or misogynistic or anything that came out of this, that came out of his mouth. I do think that this woman, I think that this Abby Grossberg, she sounds like a bully. She sounds like an abuser and she sounds like a victimizer. I've met women like her. They always act like they're so incredibly innocent and they want to put on this like totally like in the public, but everybody knows better in the background. So that's has not been with anyone who knows him. That has not been their experience. But how telling. She immediately runs to MSNBC to peddle this stuff. How incredibly telling. And as I said earlier, you know, we talked about this in our first hour. This happens, you know, on the same day as Politico came out with a story quoting senior Pentagon officials saying, oh, we're a better country without Tucker bagging on our military every night in front of hundreds or thousands of people. I'm not quite sure how stupid these, you know, cowardly sources are. But as I've said, he never criticized rank and file. He always criticized the weak leadership that pushed wokery at the expense of rank and file, at the expense of readiness. And these people, these leaders, are trying to hide behind rank and file so that they can dodge accountability. And they know that. They're trying to conflate it and acting like a criticism of their poor leadership is a criticism of all military. No, it's because we like the rank and file better than you that we're criticizing you. So he was completely right. And the fact that you have defense leaders weighing in like petty little high school girls, that just kind of, it totally entirely proves his criticisms. They all sound like DEI practicing pencil pushers. They really do. But how can you imagine if the situation was reversed and you had a leftist who left a network and it was a Republican administration and you had someone in the Pentagon remarking on a member of the press that left like MSNBC or CNN, the left would be apoplectic. Oh my God, fascism, they would cry. But when you have actual defense officials weighing in on matters of a free press, we fought a war to not have stuff like that. Interesting. I think it's War Inc. I'm trying really hard not to be jaded and, you know, everything else, but a lot of people are making it very difficult. Very, very incredibly difficult. But he seems to be doing fine. Now, as I said before, I think that whoever's going to be in that time slot, I think that they'll do well. But I do think a lot of people are asking more questions of right and left media more so than they ever did. Because I think a lot of times conservatives just, you know, there's a lot more right media than there has been previously. And I always like more voices, not fewer voices. But that also means you have to be careful what you're consuming. And I think he told it like it is. And he didn't really have any kind of, he didn't have to prove loyalties to anybody. That's very dangerous to establishment types. Very dangerous. Now, a couple of things. You have South Korea. They're having a big state dinner at the White House. And they're going to have this joint press conference and have a discussion there. Apparently, they've also been talking about any kind of aggression with China, etc. I'm sure China's watching it very carefully. And while this is happening, you have now, pull this up, Disney has, and I saw this earlier today, Disney's filed suit against DeSantis. We've gone over the Reedy Creek stuff, etc. Didn't Asha Hutchinson, didn't he just throw his hat in the ring? Hold up. But didn't he also say something about Disney? So a lot of Republicans are trying to draw distinctions between themselves and DeSantis, who hasn't even announced a run yet. And they're trying to do this by running to the left of DeSantis. And there's been a lot of assertions made by some, I think I kind of jokingly call them flaccid Republicans, because they don't like the attention that the Florida governor has gotten by going at it with Disney. Yeah, Asha Hutchinson had said the DeSantis-Disney battle is not what a conservative is about. Well, if you're not interested, Hutchinson, if he's not interested in limiting the power of a government-enabled corporation, a corporation that was allowed to skirt the rules because of government favoritism, which is absolutely antithetical to everything that conservatism is, then pray tell, what do you think is conservative? If you don't think that's conservative, then I question what you consider is conservative at all. I see a lot of these Republicans trying to run to the left of DeSantis on this issue, and I just don't get it. I mean, if you have so little in your own arsenal to brag about, if you have so few accomplishments to brag about, or if you are so inarticulate that you cannot brag about your own accomplishments and not try to run to the left and tear down perfectly good conservative policy from a Florida governor that is perceived to be your threat, then why in the hell are you even in this race in the first place? Someone needs to teach you how to campaign. I'm so tired of this. We're not gonna be dragged back to the 90s Bush compassionate whatever. We're not doing that. We actually been getting, I think, with some of these conservative leaders, finally a little closer to the Constitution. And guess what? People like it. That's why they've been rewarding it in states that have been practicing it. And why they have been not rewarding elected officials in states that haven't. I don't know why. I don't know, Asha Hutchinson. I just don't know why he's in the race. Does he have debts to pay? Does he want to be considered for a cabinet post? See, here's what happens when you wait too long, I think. I think if DeSantis is going to run, I think he should run now. Oh, I know. People are out there saying, oh, well, I don't think so. Well, timing is everything. If you don't think so, just look at Asha Hutchinson. Hell, look at Chris Christie. Now, granted, his policies were a lot different, but there at a time, he was sort of like the golden boy for the GOP, wasn't he? And then look what happened. Jeb Bush, again, policies quite different. He was kind of the golden boy for a while. And then look what happened. History is littered with people who missed their time cue when it comes to running for president. So that's my thought on it. If he's going to do it, I think he should do it this cycle. I mean, everybody knows. Well, I don't know. Byron Donalds is going to run for governor at some point, but he may have complicated it for himself after this. Oh, that's like the worst kept secret in Florida. Byron Donalds is going to run for governor at some point. It's going to happen. He's going to run. I just don't know if he's going to be able to reconcile how his state is apparently a blank, is just a garbage state from the guy that he endorsed in the primary. And I love Byron Donalds. He is hysterical. I get along with him real well. But I am curious, you know. I'm curious. How's that going to work out? Now, that being said, this Disney stuff. So Disney, they got mad because remember, that's all the Reedy Creek thing. I've read this. I made myself very familiar with this because I thought if I'm going to talk about it with you guys, then, you know, obviously, because it could affect, depending on if DeSantis runs or not, it could affect, national news, and it could be a part of, you know, your purview. So I went and I looked up everything because I hate cronyism. So I'm like, okay, well, let's look at this. Let's look and see, were they given any kind of, you know, were they given, you know, special allocations? You know, what happened? Did they still, were they, was this basically a toothless response from DeSantis? And it really wasn't, which is why you see Disney reacting the way that they were. Long story short, there were a lot of leaders in Florida over the years that really bent a knee to Disney. And they had dollar signs in their eyes, and they were really taken by that. I mean, they were really romanticized and swept off their feet by it. And so they gave Disney a lot of free rein. They gave them special considerations and government passes, basically, and exclusions to following other government rules that every other corporation in the state was required to follow. And Disney didn't have to do it. I mean, they had free rein. And what was being done was neither fair nor conservative nor good for even state business, ultimately, because at some point it was going to come to a head. And it did. And that's why these special considerations are being removed. And they're not allowing Disney to saddle everybody with the tax dollars that they're ultimately responsible for. This may be the first time that I've ever seen the left not want a corporation to pay its fair share. It is actually pretty stunning. And it's even weirder to see some flaccid Republicans go along with that. Like, what the hell is wrong with you people? Like, are you so desperate to gain favor that you're willing to run as a leftist? Because that's not going to work. We have a lot still on the way. We got headlines coming up. Leah Thomas being an abusive misogynist and smearing his swim teammates, the females. We're going to discuss that as well. And the Susan B. Anthony list. So they came out with a very strong statement on abortion. It's become, I mean, the media and the left and some on the right are trying to say it's a tricky political issue. Is it?
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So hundreds of shallow earthquakes have been detected along the California coast during an eight-month-long study. They're experiencing a record number of earthquakes. Long Beach, Seal Beach area seismologists recorded 1,000 tiny tremors over 8 months. The majority were shallow quakes, reaching depths of fewer than 2 kilometers below the surface. So that's, I don't know if that signal, if it signifies anything, but it's something that they're still studying. An Italian town could fine tourists $300 if you take a selfie. So Portofino, no. Do not take selfies in Portofino. one of the most colorful towns in Italy, has introduced a no waiting zone to stop tourists from lingering in this popular beauty spot because they take incessant selfies. So you could have a 275 euro fine if you are cited for these selfies. And the restrictions are between 10:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. That's kind of weird. Is it really that bad? That's kind of, I don't know what I think about that. Stick with us, because the abortion fight on the right is already kicked off.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here. You can listen coast to coast in a market near you. You can also stream the simulcast of the show. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV as well. A lot of stuff to discuss. And, of course, not least among them, definitely not, is this really weird, I don't know how to describe it, this shift, this attitude change that started bubbling up in the right. And to be frank about it, the Republican Party has grown terrified of talking about abortion for some reason. It is a 180 from what I grew up with and what I have seen and what we have seen in previous elections and what we even saw in 2016. And I would say even 2020. And I'm not quite sure why that is. And recently there, you know, we've had a number of candidates who have jumped into 2024 and, you know, kind of taken the lay of the land and seeing, you know, who's coming out where. You had Nikki Haley who said, let the states work this out. You've had, you know, some others that have kind of haven't really gone so far to make a statement on it, but they've been kind of dancing around the issue. There was this story from The Washington Post as well, where former President Trump, who, you know, the three justices that he appointed, I mean, you had Roe v. Wade. You think that that would be like a talking point for your campaign. But when he was, the Washington Post had asked if he supported the 6-week ban that was signed into law by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and they didn't get a direct answer. Now, citing the Post, one of their campaign spokespersons said in a statement, quote, Trump believes that the Supreme Court, led by the three justices, which he supported, got it right when they ruled this is an issue that should be decided at the state level. Well, there's been some very interesting response to that. And one of the strongest, by one of the most influential groups out there, is from the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America organization, sbaprolife.org. And that's what they're all about. They've had a pretty strong statement on this, saying that, you know, they can't support candidates that, you know, aren't, that don't go by the 6-week ban, which that's kind of where the majority of, I mean, Americans are, or the 15-week ban. That's where the majority of Americans are falling at least start there somewhere. Joining us right now, Katie Daniels, state policy director for the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America organization. And she joins us via Skype. Katie, we so appreciate what your organization does. And to start off with, because I don't want to make this about one specific candidate or another, but I am really troubled by some of the stuff that I'm seeing in the Republican Party. When did they become so afraid of talking about this issue?
Well, we have recently identified an epidemic of rapid onset federalism, where we went from 228 members of Congress filing an amicus brief in Dobbs saying, give us back the ability to make laws in this area, give it to Congress, give it to the states, give it to the people. Really, this is about the people's elected officials making these decisions. And now we're seeing a run for the hills. What we saw in November was that strong pro-life governors in particular who ran on their records, strong state lawmakers who ran on their records, they won. They picked up seats. Certainly, we saw that here in my home state of Florida, but in many other places too. If you look at Georgia and Iowa, you know, state reps and governors who signed these strong laws, heartbeat laws, or more protective, they did very well, and they did that running on their record. So presidential candidates need to learn that lesson from November. If you define yourself, if you run on your record, people can connect with what you're talking about. If you leave the space open and you let the other side define you, that's when you get into trouble.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Talking with Katie Daniel with the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America organization. The messaging from the RNC, and I know Ronna McDaniel had given an interview where, in following the loss at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, a lot of people were wondering if that had to do with abortion. Of course, the left was saying, oh, it was the abortion issue because Republicans are just so crazy. Even though Democrats have been shown survey after survey, they are entirely out of step with the majority of Americans on abortion. Democrats, literally, they had senators proposing a bill, taxpayer-funded abortion on demand up until birth. Raphael Warnock was one of the co-sponsors of that bill. Americans fall generally on the 15-week mark. And I think that's a good place to start when we're talking about saving lives. The messaging, from what I heard from activists on the ground in Wisconsin, it wasn't so much messaging. It was that there was a bad campaign run. There was a questionable candidate. There was absence of GOP push in the state of Wisconsin. And when you compare that, as you said, to your state of Florida, a 6-week ban that these lawmakers ran on, they won re-election running on this, not just in the governor's mansion, but all statewide elected offices. Miami-Dade and Palm Beach County went red. And so there was no issue. To me, it seems like that's kind of the message. You know, and I thought that the way that they handled that was correct. Maybe they should have advised the RNC at large.
Certainly in Wisconsin, another big issue was the money gap. And we saw this a lot in November last year in places where the pro-abortion side won. It was because they dumped 10 times or more the amount of money on the issue, and they just filled the gap, especially when you think about things like TV ads.
Oh, yeah.
That money really matters. Conversely, here in Florida, Senator Rubio ran a TV ad saying, "I'm pro-life, here's my record." Like, while we had wall-to-wall pro-abortion ads saying this 15-week law is a total ban, these people are crazy, his ad cut through. The people clearly weren't buying it. I went out with door knockers here in Hillsborough County in Tampa, and people said, "I'm pro-choice, but 15 weeks seems reasonable," or I'd be okay with a heartbeat. And poll after poll shows that. NPR is running a poll today that shows 76% of independents would be comfortable with a law that protected babies after the first trimester. That's so far from the Democratic Party platform. So we, as the pro-life movement, certainly Republican politicians, have to get into the specifics, because we win on specific policies. The left wins on broad platitudes.
That's a great point. That's a very good point. And right after Roe v. Wade was overturned, there was a move from Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham. He wanted to push through a bill that he was criticized for this. And I was one of the ones asking, why is he doing this so soon after? Let's let this sit for a little bit. Let's make sure that everybody's on the same page with 15-week messaging. It seemed like there was confusion within the Republican Party, because the messaging, it seems, and tell me what you think about this, because you would know this better than I would on this issue in the states. It seemed that the states that were incredibly successful at running on this and passing these bans, the heartbeat bill, or whether it's 15 weeks, they were really strong with messaging. Like, 15 weeks, that's where the majority of Americans are. The opposition wants taxpayer funded up until birth. But it seems like elsewhere where they weren't as successful, they were saying, "Oh, well, this should be just left to the states." And they were really cloudy on their messaging. Is that what you saw, looking at the way that this was handled state by state?
Yeah, the state lawmakers who won, they ran on their records. They talked about their pro-life vision. And what Lindsey Graham did with his bill, and God bless him, he was in the Senate Judiciary Committee talking about that bill today in the hearing. So we love that he's continued. It's a specific point that there's consensus around it. We know 70% of Americans support the 15-week bill or more protective. So he gave candidates something to talk about. If you didn't have a record, if you were new to politics, if your state, is not a particularly pro-life state, but you are a pro-life candidate, his bill gave these candidates something to talk about. And some of them did that really well. And some of them ignored the gift that they were given. But I think by driving that specific, by talking about how it compares to Europe, by talking about the humanity of the child at 15 weeks, it really let us dig into specifics. And we saw the candidates who didn't take advantage of that, many of them didn't win.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're talking with Katie Daniel with Susan B. Anthony Group, Pro-Life America. Your group came out with a statement after the Washington Post piece ran, saying that the former president's state's only position is unacceptable to the pro-life movement, because it was very vague. It just said, leaving it up to the states. And that's something that apparently, from what I've seen, former Governor Nikki Haley has also said. Is that a dodge, do you think, from candidates who just say, well, let's leave it up to the states to decide? Do you interpret that as sort of a dodge to avoid talking about, the details of this issue?
Well, I think for so long, as we were so focused on Roe v. Wade, that was a common refrain. I went back, I watched the debate where then candidate Trump talked about what a partial birth abortion is and was so visceral, and the American people connected to that and said, "I reject it." He also said, "This is a states' rights issue." So So for many years, that was the conversation because of Roe v. Wade. We need every candidate and every American to understand this is not a state right issue. This is a human rights issue. And that babies in California and New York and Illinois have the same rights and dignity, and they deserve protections too. And so that's where we see this as an opportunity for states like mine to pass a heartbeat law, because that's where our consensus is. And I hope that we can move that forward. I believe that we can. But to set that federal minimum standard so that babies everywhere do have some level of protection.
When it comes to 2024 as well, I mean, it would be odd to have a nominee that did not at least sign on to the 15 week ban. What are the organization's thoughts on that? And how is that, especially with this weird, because there's been a push by some campaigns to not get involved in the cultural issues. And I've always thought the reason that we've been in this position is because we've always run from these cultural issues. I mean, after it's cultural first, and then it turns into policy. Your organization was very strong with their wording. It's, you know, this is unacceptable to the pro-life movement. You know, we the 15-week national standard is, you know, if any, I think you said, well, we will oppose any presidential candidate who refuses to embrace at a minimum a 15-week national standard to stop painful late-term abortions while allowing states to enact further protections. If we were to get a Republican nominee that doesn't voice that and doesn't sign on to that, would your group not endorse them?
Well, we have put our statement out there that we expect the GOP candidate to support a law that protects babies nationwide at 15 weeks or more protective. And so that is going to be the standard we're evaluating every candidate. We want to hear their pro-life vision. It's not just about that gestational protection. It's other policies. This is a crisis in our country. So you mentioned some people saying, why are we talking about this? In South Carolina, their Senate was debating a bill yesterday that would be a full protection. And their Senate Majority Leader Massey was asked this question from his colleagues. Is this the most pressing issue in South Carolina right now? And he said, if 12,000 people in our state were killed for any other reason in a single year, we would consider that the biggest crisis in our state. So why should we treat abortion any differently? There are going to be nearly a million abortions in the United States this year. How can we not treat that like the crisis that it is?
Amen to that. Katie Daniel with Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, the website sbaprolife.org. Really appreciate what all you do and the reasoning that you have brought to this message battle. Thank you all so much and appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Of course. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour. And she made a great point. It's that it's connecting to people, that visceral, you know, the visceral messaging. Because when people think of it, and think of it this too, how many times have Republicans put forward over-the-counter birth control and Democrats have defeated it? How many times? I mean, just in the past couple of years, it's been twice. Why? It makes absolutely no reason. It makes no reason at all. I can't justify it. And with something like this, I really hope that we're not getting to a position where Republicans are afraid of their own shadows with these issues because they're being cowed by the media. And it's really weird to see certain campaigns who, you know, had no problem campaigning on it, especially in the lead up, like with Trump, with Roe v. Wade. That should be, I mean, he should be, that should, who's advising him? That should be part of his, that should be part of his campaign messaging. He should have included that in his announcement. That is a significant achievement that now the campaign spokesperson is like, let's just go ahead and have it be a states' rights issue. I understand the argument for states' rights issue, but in the Declaration of Independence, you know, you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What we're talking about right now is, do you have the right to life? Do you have the right to exist once you come into existence? Or is ageism going to be used against you as a result? Because this is going to be treated like, you know, an afterthought of birth control. And that's what Democrats have proposed it to be. So this is going to be very, and I also think that too, one last quick thing. I think that the law, the Florida law, the 6-week heartbeat law, the 6-week ban, I think that some of these politicians that are coming out in this primary are trying to figure out a way to differentiate themselves from a potential, you know, gubernatorial, you know, Ron DeSantis run from Florida. But the way to do that is not to run to the left of him. That is not the way to do it. I don't want to see any Republican water down their record or position because they think that they have to do that in order to differentiate themselves from him. Not the way to do it.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
Well, I do think that the culture wars are getting in the way sometimes. I mean, just the other day, I was testifying in the Appropriations Subcommittee explaining how our budget was going to help with things like railroad safety, air traffic control, and other transportation needs. And we had to take a break so that they could all go and vote on a bill to kick transgender teenagers off of sports teams. That was the priority for the House GOP that day. So these things really are getting in the way of our ability to get work done. We're
those
literally
dumb bitches
building bridges, and they're
about
literally
sports.
Banning books.
That's what he just said. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
That's what Pete Buttigieg said. He was mad because, you know, women who are competing wouldn't shut up about the men and just let the men take over their sports. I mean, you know, you stupid women. I find that answer to be misogynistic and abusive. First off, the reason that anyone wasn't able to get anything done, that Secretary Mayor Newman Poot, is because he literally left right at the start of his term for months, refused to answer any emails. He was a diversity hire, an underqualified diversity hire. That's what Pete Buttigieg is, an underqualified diversity hire. Right when he gets hired, he pieces out for months. Wouldn't take any emails, wouldn't take any calls, wouldn't answer any questions. I mean, we were in the middle of a supply chain crisis, and he's like out for a couple of months. And then he comes back. Well, the reason we couldn't do anything is because these Republicans were, they were trying to protect females from the misogynistic takeover of women's sports. Good grief. All right, today in Stupidity, Kane.
Ooh, that could have been it right there with Pete Buttigieg. So much stupidity, though. Luckily for me to choose from, our vice president.
I knew you were going to take this one.
Kamala
Harris.
Listen, it's more word salad, people.
Yay.
Get your forks.
So I think it's very important, as you have heard from so many
incredible
leaders, for us at every moment in time, and certainly this one, to see the moment in time in which we exist and are present, and to be able to contextualize it.
I can't do it anymore.
It's important to see the moment in time in which we exist and are present, to be unburdened by what has been. Wow. Sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Find us on Facebook, YouTube. Like and subscribe. Back with you tomorrow.